Welcome to Everything But The Tip, the podcast that bucks the trend of the mainstream golf content being churned out by the masses. Presented by the co-founders of Smart Golf and Fitness, we're on a mission to guide golfers towards genuine improvement. No swing tips, no shortcuts, we're anti-instant gratification. Join us as we navigate the complexities of the game, offering insights on how to truly excel in golf by embracing the challenges and breaking free from the usual quick fix mentality. All right, guys, we're back for another episode of Everything But The Tip. Tonight, once again, it's just me and my co-host, Tommy Asuma.
We've been showering as of late. I'm not sure what's going on here. We're having trouble getting some guests or I'm not sure.
Well, I wouldn't say we're having trouble. We just haven't made a concerted effort because we're just so excited about all the subject matter that is readily at our fingertips that we'd like to share. And, you know, we'll get guests on. We got a lot of students having a lot of success. I want to bring them on. And we are challenging a lot of our staff currently to go ahead and put some thought into some future episodes, which I know some are diligently working on that I'm excited to interview them on. But, you know, as we've been doing, we'll continue to go and produce, you know, the episodes that we have been with you and I. And, you know, the feedback we've been receiving is pretty solid now.
Yeah, we've been getting some pretty solid feedback on the most recent episodes. I was thinking maybe the staff was so nervous about how crummily I did on the first episode. They didn't want to do the same thing and come on out. But now they're putting some quality content together for us. We're making sure things kind of make a little bit of sense, and we'll be having some guests join us here very, very soon with some very exciting content. But you're gonna have to listen to us one more time here at least. So
tonight we have what we think will be a relatively quick episode, and the subject matter we'd like to discuss is what we call the 11 characteristics that determine the rate of development. Now,
one of our five required readings.
Exactly.
So we've right where I was referenced going. A lot of our required readings in some previous episodes, if you've listened to those. So, you know, we'll slowly but surely kind of get through those and dive deep into those and unpack those, if you will. But yeah, tonight's 11 characteristics.
We've definitely mentioned it. If you've been a follower from day one, this is definitely subject matter we have discussed. It's just we want an episode that we completely isolate this content and, yeah, we'll go through it relatively quickly. I think, you know, the first place we should start is, you know, prior to going through each individual characteristic, we should probably just discuss why the heck we put the list together in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, we've been developing the list, if I recall correctly. You know, we've been here for, 5 years? I mean, probably started the list 7-8 years ago, I'd say. Maybe, at the precipice of our relationship as we started to kind of break down what our overall philosophy are, what are those some foundational characteristics of it. But list, I think, started at like 7 or 8, something like that, right?
Yeah, 8 was the original list. It was always subject matter we discussed, but nothing that we actually put pen to paper and made it, you know, formalized it in the nature that we have and then presented it in front of our clients and then made it required content that they must absorb prior to the journey beginning.
No, we, through our journey of just continuing education, trying to, you know, make ourselves better at what we do, both from a, you know, just a pure teaching and training perspective, but also as business owners and professionals and colleagues and things like that, we added a few additional items to the list. So I think that got us to 11 now.
Yeah, and you've heard me mention it time and time again. The list is probably, you know, much longer than 11. You know, there's a few items that I think I could immediately put on there, but we've settled at 11. It serves its purpose. And, but yeah, back to the original question, why did we put it together in the first place? Well, you guys have heard us time and time again, several episodes. What is really, really important to ensure success for the long term and everyone's journey in golf instruction is to make sure their expectations match reality. Now, as a coach and, you know, as a student, not everyone learns at the same rate, right? And, you know, for me as a coach, that was frustrating. You know, why did I have a lesson earlier in the day where this guy had a particular swing flaw? I introduced him some information, gave him a drill, and throughout the course of that 60 minutes, it looked like he made some solid strides. He was able to execute the drill and then received some of the benefits in his actual full swing, whereas potentially later in the day, I have an individual with a very, very similar swing flaw, try to have the same play call, give him the same drill. Yet we never even got to the point where he could execute the drill correctly. We ran out of time. So it's like, man, what truly was the difference? And what's the knee-jerk reaction between what was the difference? What will most people say?
One guy was more talented than the other?
Correct. Right? And at the time, it was kind of like, all right, yeah, I guess I should just chalk it up to that. And, you know, maybe guy, you know, we've had an episode. Go look at it. Go listen to it. It's
episode 8.
Episode 8, deliberate practice is, you know, talent. Is talent overrated? But yeah, that is the knee-jerk reaction. You know what? Yeah, this guy learned faster because he was more talented. But, you know, another required reading, which we've talked about, we haven't fully unpacked it with its own episode, but we will, is growth mindset. Growth mindset versus fixed mindset.
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves.
No, not yet. Okay. I can see why you think that, because it is one of the 11 characteristics.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. But what I wanted to say is, as we go through these, if you were to just chalk it up to one person's more talented than the other, well, then you completely contradict yourself as being a coach that's coaching growth mindset.
Wow, that's deep.
Well, it's deep. Truth, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
so no, it's like, all right, well, what's some of the objective information right in front of us that could better answer the question of why one learned faster than the other? And that's where we started to come up with our list.
So it sounds like, in addition to just making sure that expectations match up with reality, which we've talked about a ton and we'll continue to touch on that, sounds like you put this in place for you as a coach, as well as our future coaches, to serve as kind of a guideline to help them just manage some of those disappointments, some of those frustrations, some of those things as they continue to build their book and get different types of athletes and different types of golfers in here.
Spot on. That was actually the original intention. It was to kind of float in the background. I want it to be part of our curriculum as we bring on new coaches. Because, you know, one thing I do want to highlight, what I see in, you know, first-year coaches or call it greener coaches is they're pretty good at the diagnosis part. You know, understanding the ball flight laws, cause and effect, you know, picking up on the technology and TrackMan and being able to interpret that data pretty quickly. But when they have a student in front of them and they've decided to, you know, call whatever play call they're going to have, give them whatever drill they think will make the most sense, as soon as they run into a little adversity, more than that they would have anticipated because they've given this to other people and saw their evolution, which might have been at a faster rate, I see coaches call audibles way too soon.
Panic alert.
Yeah,
panic
exactly.
Alert.
Yep. And it might be because they just are witnessing the execution in front of them and this guy seems hopeless. He might be getting frustrated, getting emotional. The ball might be going to the corner of the room or, you know, to the side of the range. That student clearly is getting emotional and frustrated. So as a greener coach, you know, not having the opportunity to work with a student at length, they also get bothered by that, freak out a little bit, forget that they're the expert in the relationship, and they call an audible and say, oh, you know what? Let's go on to the next drill, right? So what I wanted is some education and some training that could show the coach, hey, not everyone's going to learn at the same rate, and there are very specific reasons for this. And that doesn't mean call an audible. That means you're just going to have to go with the play call for a lot longer than you probably would have had to in another circumstance.
How do you know when that play call has kind of run its course and then you kind of audible from there?
That's a good question, and that could be a very lengthy answer.
Sorry.
My play calls, I feel at this point in my career, have gotten pretty darn good. So what I mean by that is, you know, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole here, but when I make a play call, my whole goal is if they get 1 millimeter of this, they're going to be better at golf. Their timing is going to be easier to repeat. And then if they can get 2 millimeters and 3 meters, whatever you want to call it, they're going to get better, right? So it's not, what's the quote? Search for progress, not perfection. I need you to continue to get better at this. So the you want to experiment a little bit. I mean, again, this could be a whole other episode. I always start with a verbal command, right? Just give them some verbal direction and they might surprise you and be able to execute it. Then from there, it's a drill, you know, and then just depending on the student, depends on how much detail you have to go into that drill. And then there's progressions, right? So sometimes you'll start with no ball no club. Then you'll go club, no ball. And then you'll go club, ball, slow speeds. And then you'll go, okay, cool, we've got to that point. Let's go club, ball, slow speeds, 10 in a row. And then you can progress in speed and climb the ladder till you're full speed. But again, that's a deeper conversation. I think it's fair. I would say this. If you've determined what needs to be corrected, there are some drills that will probably work better than others. I think the longer you coach, you find the ones that just kind of work better than, you know, because you can get fancy with, you know, for example, if you're working on sway, there's 10 different drills you could work on. I've found my three that really work well. I might bounce back and forth between them, but if you've done a good job to instruct them and you're patient, stay stubborn on that because your one objective is to make sure they don't sway anymore.
Right? Sure. I get that. Cool.
Okay, so let's get into the list.
Let's do it.
All right.
Because I'm not getting any younger.
Here we go. I do think we did answer why we thought it was important to explain the list, correct?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, number one, make sure that expectations match up reality. And then selfishly for the coaches is to make sure that they've got some understanding why things aren't going to work on a linear pattern based on play calls they've made with Perfect. Other people before.
So. The only thing I'd add is it will help, you know, the expectations versus reality plays a direct role in patience, right? And that's what we need. If we can build the trust and we can pave the appropriate patience and an individual accepts reality, depending on where they fall within this list, it's inevitable for them to ultimately break through.
Sorry, we're not there yet. I just thought of something. It's kind of like the whole like immediate gratification model Yep. that golf is basically built upon. If a younger coach doesn't have this as part of their foundation from a coaching standpoint, the student in the bay can read that individual if they're starting to just scramble for drills. Oh, let's try this. Ooh, let's try this. Ooh, let's try this. And, you know, they can read into that and it feeds right into that mentality that we're trying to break and get them more patient and become a better student.
I agree. I'm all for experimentation and lessons, but there's a way to go about doing that. And then I could add to that is saying, you know, how about everyone that, you know, everyone's guilty. Most people are guilty that are golfers of going through YouTube, Instagram, social media looking for swing tips. Pay close attention to this list because depending on where you fall on it, you're wasting your time looking at a lot of these swing tips based on the fact that you interpreting it, you know, understanding it, visually seeing it will not even come close to an immediate execution, right? All right, so let's go through it. Number one of the 11 characteristics is age.
So does that mean you've played longer, so it's easier to get better at golf?
Wait, I think that's step two.
Oh.
Oh, you're jumping ahead. So no, this is literally how long you've been on the planet.
Oh, okay.
It could definitely correlate with how long you've played. We'll get there in a second.
A few of these tie together.
But let's stay on number one here. So age, very straightforward. Okay. It's pretty straightforward. When it comes to changing a motor pattern, the younger you are, the more plastic your brain, okay, the more neuroplasticity you have, okay, the faster you're going to learn motor skills.
So it's basically a lot easier to break any habits you've created and create new ones?
Yeah, and think about it. The younger you are, the less time you've had to really, really ingrain the habit in the first place.
Right.
Right? Got so that. If you've, and that's where we'll get into step two. But I want to stay on age. Yes, it is probably in most cases, if you're trying to change a motor skill, preferable to be younger than older. But let's not completely, you know, draw a line there. I mean, there are benefits for being on the planet a little bit longer, too. And that does come with experience. So that's the whole conversation between neuroplasticity and wisdom, right? If you've had coaching before, you know, you've played sports in the past and you have, they call it a higher level of intelligence, maturity, you could say that's, you could be a better, more coachable student, which has its benefits. But when it comes down to the science and the length of time it's going to take an individual to reach the autonomous state, science behind changing a motor pattern, it's better to be younger.
Yeah, I mean, so we talk a lot about different stages of development, so peak growth volume or peak height volume. Basically what that is, if, you know, all of us or any of you that have kids, we've, you know, get them measured at the doctor every year. We have the little, like, you know, height chart out in front, you know, the front door when you walk in and see that little Johnny's now, you know, he's almost 5 foot and we're all excited about that. But those specific, how, whether you've got an early bloomer or a late bloomer, that is directly tied to specific skills that are required for golf, specifically speed, strength, stuff like that. We have different windows that are proven scientifically that if you specialize or you focus your training efforts on going fast or lifting weights or skill development, then you are going to raise your, you know, ceiling in terms of being able to be better in those particular areas.
So, yep, 100%. We're going to dive a little bit deeper into that on step three because you jumped ahead a little bit. All right, number two. So number one, age. Number two, we talked about, is how long have you actually been playing golf, right? I think this one's pretty straightforward. An individual that's been playing 2 or 3 years versus the individual that's been playing 30, 40 years, which one of those individuals has moved the golf club more? Well, probably the one playing longer. So if you've moved the golf club more, what have you probably done? You've probably made that hardwire of that pattern more ingrained, right? That habit is more solidified. So
it's kind of like driving the same route to work over and over the course of your 25, 30-year career. I mean, several years into that, you don't even have to think about it anymore. Like, you're basically
in
driving
autonomy
on autopilot.
Exactly.
You know, and you're not even paying attention.
So. No, it's, you could use so many different examples. You could talk about brushing your teeth. I mean, we all brush it with, you know, our dominant hand, I would imagine. But, you know, if you take someone that's been doing that for 30 years and you say, hey, I need you to wake up tomorrow morning and use your other hand. And you say that to a guy that's been at 40 and a kid that's 10, well, it's going to be a lot more challenging for the guy that's been doing it for 40 years, you know, whatever, a lot longer time. So I like guys to realize, you know, face that truth and that reality that, yeah, man, and that there's a correlation with that with step one. If the older you are, the more likelihood you have been playing the game longer. Now, don't get me wrong. We'll take a, you know, 45-year-old beginner. It happens. That's cool. It's great. Come play the game. There's never too late to pick it up, but there's definitely some parallels between your age and how long you've been playing.
Well, I think there's a misconception too, just based on, you know, our service offerings. You know, we can be a little bit intimidating. Some people, we've run into people that have called and said, hey, I'm going to go take some lessons. I'm going to go to the range. I'm going to go hit some balls before I come in for my assessment or things like that. But this is the best place for people to come. Don't go out there. Don't get some bad instruction. Don't go out and ingrain some, you know, soft, bad habits before you come in here and get, you know, taken through a screen, taken through a physical assessment, and figure out what are the areas that are going to make this game, you know, as enjoyable for you as possible, and which ones are going to make it a little bit more challenging. So that's important to know, that even though you haven't played, we take beginners all the way up to, you know, aspiring tour pros to come on in. So
no, I think that's an important point to make. It's always kind of, you know, been mind-boggling to me that for how many people that decide to pick up golf, they do it on their own and risk instilling these bad habits. You know, like I'm about to start playing paddle, believe it or not. I'm going to sign up hopefully Wednesday nights.
Whoa. Yeah. Yes.
You know, and I have zero doubts that, you know, based on my background and athletic ability, eye hand coordination, that I'll probably be decent with it. But what am I going to do before I play? I'm going to go take some instruction because I don't want to develop any bad habits. And, you know, if there's any nuggets that he can give me to help me with some technique, yeah, I'd like to know how to do it correctly from day one.
Right. And one final note, I think, before we move on, I just want to note, like, we don't want to deter those that, you know, are in the back nine of their golf career, let's call it, or that have been playing for a lot of years. Changes can still be made. We just need to understand that, you know, those changes might be smaller increments. Those changes might take a little bit longer. But as long as we're all on the same page in terms of, like, what it's going to take to get there, if you want to get there, we're going to get you there as best we can.
No, I love that. And if you are listening to this, and for Tommy's way of saying it, on your back nine, you know, I don't know if you've ever really thought about what we're discussing about, but maybe you have taken lessons and maybe you haven't had a lot of success, and maybe the knee-jerk reaction was to point the finger at the coach. Maybe the knee-jerk reaction was to point the finger at the information. I'm sure there's a number of individuals out there looking at YouTube, looking at Instagram, listening to the advice, going out there, putting their best efforts, you know, based on their interpretation, intention, and execution, and not getting the result that they thought they would get. And then potentially, you know, as we try to protect our ego, blaming the information versus themselves. And it's and that's why we talk about this, not to deter, but to create realistic expectations. Like, you 100% can learn, right? Sure. It's just the rate in which you will just might not be the same as, you know, your buddy that's, you know, half your age that joined our program.
Yeah, you can definitely teach old dogs new tricks.
Yeah, it's the cerebellum, remember?
Right.
I was talking to a guy that, that's a specialty. He studies the brain, but he's like, he doesn't say teach an old dog new tricks. He said, you can't teach an old cerebellum new tricks.
Ah, got it.
But you can. Okay, number three. You already discussed this, so I'm going to let you continue to discuss it in further depth. But number three, sports played growing up.
Well, sports played is different from like hitting the, you know, the strength and speed windows and things like that.
There's 100% parallels, though.
Absolutely, there are. So there is transference of learning. So I think one of the biggest myths out there and some of the things that we hear is like, I've got a baseball swing, like, I suck at golf. Like, I can't play golf. And there's a few things in the baseball swing that are not advantageous to being a good golfer. However, there are more positive things for good hitters in baseball, good pitchers in baseball, that will transfer over and make this learning process a lot easier. So that's one of the biggest things. If you've played any type of rotational sport, if you've played any type of implement sport, you know, with any type of success prior, you have the capability of being a very good golfer. I've always been baffled by really good baseball hitters. I've been really baffled by good tennis players that come on in here and all of a sudden they don't use their lower body at all. They exhibit zero separation of the lower body and upper body, and they just try to swing the golf club with their arms only. It's absolutely baffling to me because there's so many similarities in terms of how you gather energy from the ground, you transfer it up, and then, you know, ultimately, you know, need to address or hit the ball based on the sequencing that goes on in your body and with the implement and the club.
Yes, I would say, first of all, I'd be baffled to see that as well. I don't see a ton of that. What I would say is this. When it comes to sports play, Tommy talked about certain windows of development, right? So, you know, we'll get guys that are like, I didn't really play sports. But it's like, well, no, like from a very young age, did you play any sports? Well, yeah, I played t-ball. I played soccer. You know, I played hockey for a year. And it's like, well, that's actually really, really important. Because as we know now, we won't go too deep into it, but it's like there are certain windows of development where you're primed to be introduced to certain skill sets, whether that's speed, balance, eye-hand coordination, agility, etc. You can get introduced to those skill sets through so many different activities. It could be as simple as, did you play tag with your friends on the playground? Were you running, you know, jumping on the monkey bars? Were you running across the bridge? Were you, you know, juking side to side to not get tagged, right? You're working on agility, speed, and balance right there, right? Were you playing baseball? Well, now you're working on eye-hand coordination. You actually are working on sequencing. Not to say that you picked up a bat and had perfect technique, but I can tell you, black and white, the players that came in here and they started our program that played baseball or hockey growing up, they make us look good real quick. You know, and I know you said you were baffled by those individuals that don't use a lot of lower body. Chances are, if they're not, I don't think they're probably very good at their sport. For the ones that come in here that are elite, that played at a high level, not going to say it's 100%, but a majority of the time, their kinematic sequence, ground up, how they use it, it's not perfect. You know, there's some idiosyncrasies that are fundamentals that are more appropriate to a baseball swing, golf swing, but I would way rather have a baseball player and hockey player when they get started. And, you know, you get guys like, I'm coaching one right now. I'm going to give him a shout out. Mr. Dan Rosenblum, if you listen to our podcast. He's a baseball player. You know, he doesn't really transfer his weight well to his lead side. He sits there and spins out.
Because they drive off that back foot.
Exactly.
That's one of the things. It's a major component, but it's very minor. If you can coach him through that and get him off that back foot, phenomenal.
But he all by himself. It's homegrown. It's not super pretty. We're going to make it a lot more pretty. But he's gotten pretty far just on raw ability. And I can tell you flat, black and white, if he didn't grow up playing baseball, he would not have gotten to where he's gotten in golf, the level of success he's had without that background. So, again, the reason that this is important, if you are someone that did not play any sports growing up. You grew up, you ran track, you swam, you played chess.
That's a sport.
listen, sports with, it is a sport. A sport that's complementary to the rotary move and how you use the ground in a golf swing.
Typically, and eye-hand coordination, sure, things like that. I mean, my wife, like, she always says that, you know, when she's out playing catch with the boys and, you know, she's trying to get into golf a little bit, very mildly, you know, she was a swimmer. She didn't play any type of sport that involved an implement or balls. So.
No comment. it's funny because in an interview, I'll just be like, all right, be honest with me. Okay, cool, you played sports. But can you catch a football? Can you throw a football? And I'm just curious on how confident their answer is. Because, you know, we might take it for granted because we grew up playing every sport, you know? But you get guys sitting across the table like, not really, no. It's like, okay, cool. Well, that doesn't mean you can't learn. Doesn't mean you can't get to a level in golf that you're really going to enjoy it. But that's a super important. No, when you're sitting there struggling in Hitty Bay and your buddy's taking a lesson with us and he learned at a faster rate and you're sitting there getting all down on yourself saying, man, am I ever going to be able to do this? Does everyone learn at this rate? Why is it such a struggle for me? Well, let's look at your background, you know, and that's going through all these characteristics, but I might highlight sports. Dude, you didn't play sports growing up, man. That's not your fault. It's okay. We can still get this.
We'll find your dad.
Just kidding. Yeah, I say, did your dad play catch with you in the backyard growing up? But yeah, you talked about a ceiling earlier. Playing the sports and being introduced to those skill sets in those windows, it really just heightens your ceiling of potential.
Yeah, and I think for parents out there, so, you know, if you've got your kids in individualized training, things like that, make sure they know where your kid's at in terms of growth spurt. You know, if they're, you know,
peak growth velocity curve.
Exactly. If they're an early bloomer and things like that, to know where they're at. If you're introducing new skills and this kid's in the midst of like a growth spurt, like they're super clumsy. That's why the feet get real big. That's why they're kind of stumbling all over themselves.
Motor morons.
Yeah. That's the worst time to introduce a new skill. That's when you try and ingrain and try and just work on the skills that are familiar with them and get really, really good at those. Wait for that, you know, that growth spurt to kind of slow down a little bit. Now you can get after some new skills. But, you know, speed is the same way. Strength is the same way. You got that kid that, you know, rolls in with a mustache one day and bulging biceps and everybody's like, holy God, where did this guy come from? But, you know, coaches should recognize that, be able to throw some weight on that kid and take advantage of that window that he's in.
No doubt.
So that's where I think, you know, parents that are trying to get their kid to hit it, you know, straight at age 4 and 5, it's like, no, you want them to swing fast. Get that thing out there as far as you can. We can dial it back and get it, you know, go in the right direction. But, you know.
Yep, swing as hard as you can. And that's just a small little note. The worst thing you can do for your kid is putting a club in his hand that's too long and too heavy. Err on the side of too short and too light. Want them ripping that thing. All right, moving on. All right, so we got age. We've got years played. We got 3 sports played. And we also said this episode was going to be relatively short, and it's not going to be. All right. Number 4, physical capability, physical screen.
Well, I think we touched on this.
How does that play a role in the rate of development?
Right, but I think we've touched on this pretty heavily over the last couple episodes, so we can get through this real quick. But it's like if you've got limitations in mobility, you've got limitations in stability in the body, it's going to affect your mechanics. It's going to affect sequencing. It's going to affect all of the different, you know, factors that go into how effectively you can create a consistent, you know, positive, efficient swing. It's also going to lead to a lot of those flaws or faults or swing characteristics that we talked about in previous episodes. So better your screen results, better your body moves, better, you know, mobility, stability model, so to speak, you have, the better likelihood you have to be able to develop new swing characteristics, develop new habits, things like that.
So. Yeah, the only thing I would add is, you know, if we've found a swing characteristic in which we know that we'd like to go after, and we've talked to the trainer, and they say, yeah, he's a little limited there, but we definitely can improve it. You can definitely position his golf swing in that preferred manner. It might take a little bit longer. As we know, in the gym, fitness, whether it's strength, flexibility, trying to relieve certain areas of pain, there's a timeline associated with that. That's all I just want to point out is, you know, if we've determined the direction we want to go in your golf swing requires some physical improvement, well, there's a timeline with that. So, like, let's be realistic. All right, sure. So that's easy.
Number five?
Ties into it as well. I mean, kind of the same thing.
Past injuries, right? I would say this. If there's anything a coach is asking you to do that results in pain, number one, you will never be able to do that. Your brain will not allow you to.
I think we mentioned that before. One of the quickest ways to make a swing change is introduce pain. So
exactly, which means the way you're swinging is probably that adjustment, that change, right? Because anything else is painful, so that's where your pattern is its pattern, right?
Right.
But if we talk to the trainer and they say, hey, the reason he has pain is because of XYZ, and we can actually alleviate that so you can take him on that direction, again, there's a timeline associated with that.
Yeah, so the screen results, major injuries go hand in hand. Oftentimes, those major injuries lead to those limitations in strength and mobility that will lead to those screen results not being as, you know, optimal as we want, and then we'll figure out whether those things can be changed, adjusted, what's the timeline related to that, and we'll communicate those results and move from there.
Perfect. All right. On to the next. Number six, lifestyle. What the heck does that mean?
Sorry.
That was good. Sounded good. Sounded tasty.
Hey, very tasty. You know, what's your day-to-day look like? You know, you have a job where you're sitting a lot all day long? Are you hunched over a computer? Or you have a long commute? What's your posture look like? You know, what are your sleeping habits look like?
How does that play a role in the rate of development?
Well, if you're not sleeping at all and you're practicing 23 hours a day, you should be damn good at this sport. But obviously, you know, we talk a lot about thoracic extension. We talk a lot about
rotation. Spine extension. Yeah, right. Let's highlight that.
The upper part of your back. So again, if you're sitting at a desk, you've got multiple monitors, you're slightly rotated one direction. You know, it takes you 45 minutes to get to work, or maybe you take, you know, public transportation, but you've got your computer out because you're grinding from sun up to sundown. Your upper back is rounded. You've got a C posture, let's call
it. Shutting your core off.
Yeah, shutting your core off. You do that for 8, 9, 10 hours a day, and then you want to come and, you know, do an hour's worth of physical activity and then an hour's worth of lesson. We're trying to undo 8 to 10 hours of just poor posture that's just ingraining that and creating that limitation in that short period of time. And we're pretty damn good at what we do here, but that's a tough task to kind of overcome. So we talk a lot about how do we improve some of those lifestyle factors. Can we get your desk set up a little bit more ergonomically? Can we get your monitors more in front? Can we be cognizant of, are we staying rotated for a very long time? If we've got a long email we're reading and we've got our hand just sitting on that mouse, can we bring the hands down into your lap? There's a ton of things. I like to ask people if they've got a long commute to lift up their rearview mirror higher than they could typically see out, which will promote them to sit up taller versus just sitting in
love
there
that.
And slouching lower and lower as the commute bears on you more and more. So, a lot of people say that, you know, yeah, I work a lot. I don't have time to practice. I don't know if I can get in here for a couple times a week. But realistically, all those things that you're doing outside of those excuses are the ones that are really taking a major toll on how good you can get at this game. So we coach them on that. We talk about it. We will harp on it just like, you know, your third grade teacher, just like your mom, everything. Hey, quit slouching. Sit up, you know, stand up straight, you know. So,
yeah, this is a big one because the whole list is the rate. You know, the 11 characteristics that determine the rate of development. Well, lifestyle has a massive impact. And not only could potentially determine the rate, it could determine whether we make the change at all.
Right.
So if we've, you know, determined your physical screen, you've got poor T-spine extension, and therefore you don't rotate very well in your backswing, not getting enough depth, and, you know, because of that, you're constantly steep in transition. Let's say that's the example, constantly over the top. Well, if we're doing everything we can in the hitting bay to get you more rotation, we're doing everything we can in the gym to increase your T-spine extension, but your lifestyle looks identical to what it looked like when you started the process, aka sitting in poor posture at work, sitting in poor posture as you drive, and so on, we're not going to make that change. We're just not. So part of our job here at Smarkov is, yes, to improve your lifestyle. And there are a lot more benefits to increasing your T-spine extension than getting a better golf swing. But anyway, I think that's an easy one that we can cherry pick to kind of paint the picture on why lifestyle is on the list.
Next up, we've got genetics. So
this one's real quick.
Real quick. Unfortunately, some of us are born with some better Levi's than others. So
that's it. I mean, we don't have to go too deep into this, but it definitely is the truth. You know, we're talking about muscle composition. We're talking about lever length, you know, arm length, leg length, shoulder width, etc. We're talking about, you know, obviously the makeup of your brain. You know, do you come from parents that were athletes? Right? Did you come with parents that never played a sport growing up? You know, a huge, huge role. We're not going to pretend we're experts on genetics, but, you know, this list would be extremely flawed if it wasn't on it. It's unfortunately one of the items on the list that we really don't have a lot of control over, but it's on there.
Funny thing is, we don't really ask many things about it. Hey, was your mom or dad an Olympic athlete by chance, or a professional golfer? Might be worth a conversation.
It's worth a question to say, hey, did your parents play sports?
Yeah.
Number eight, really straightforward. Time available. Pretty straightforward. Well, the more you put into something, the more you get out of it. That's it. You know, and we all have jobs, time requirements. Some of us have kids. Some of us play paddle after work, and so on. So that, I mean, we don't have to explain this.
Right. But I mean, I think it's worth noting that every little bit helps, right? So it's like, you don't need to have 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. You don't have to have 5 hours. We used to, you know, put together like a hard copy, like, you know, playbook. We've got a digital copy now, you know, our workbook that we work through, but we used to ask for like, what, 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day? That's all it takes. So even that's you after your commute, getting down on your living room floor, lying on a foam roller for 10 minutes, that's gonna help you and your golf game and your rate of development way better than getting home from, you know, work and then just getting right onto the couch or into your recliner or whatever. So I think the point is just, yes, time available. Some people have more than others. Some people will make more time than others, but every little bit helps. So whether it's 5, whether it's 10, whether it's 15, you know, whether you've got your wedge sitting next to your, you know, recliner and you're just grabbing that wedge and working on that new grip, you know, pattern that you're trying to work on, getting comfortable with that grip, anything little bit helps. So it's cumulative.
I agree. I think without knowing, you kind of jumped into number 9. I would consider all that work ethic, right? Yes, we might only require 5 minutes, you know, and say, hey, that's better than nothing. You know, we've talked about a reverse handlebar story in the past where a guy learned how to ride a bike, where if you turn the steering wheel to the left, tire went right, vice versa. He only practiced 5 minutes a day. So I'm glad you highlighted that because it's the truth. 5 minutes is better than nothing. But the reality is, if you could allocate more time to that, as long as it's quality and you're in the learning zone, we'd probably prefer it. But I think what you described, which is step 9, is work ethic, right? There's some that have time, there's some that make time, right? There's some that take responsibility, there's some that blame. There's some that come in and they're really, really coachable. They follow direction, they're doing their best. They leave their skepticism at the door, right? And they go all in and they trust you.
Sure. And that's where, like, our director of fitness at Lombard facility, Cody's done a really tremendous job from a physical standpoint of putting together these GGBs, these guaranteed get better. So it's like, it's directly tied. You know, there's a ton of different ways that we can address an area of the screen that is not what we exactly want. But for those that, you know, aren't ready to make that next step or just want, you know, just one thing to work on, we give you a GGB. It's a guaranteed get better. It's going to help 99.9% of the people out there. It's not going to put them at risk. And if you can get in the habit of doing this every day, you know, once, then a couple times a day and whatnot, hopefully it builds a little bit of trust in your mind and you see enough progress that you're like, I might be able to allocate a few more minutes into this. So,
no, I love that. Although, you know, time available, work ethic are on the list, are two extremely important ingredients. You know, the good news is yes, we're prepared to be very appreciative and understanding of everyone's demands on their schedule. And we've made a deliberate choice and effort to put together some, you know, 5-minute protocols, if you will, to make sure that no matter how busy you are, we all can figure out 5 minutes, right? And if you're able to do that on a daily basis, well, we're going to see results.
Cool. Last couple.
Number 10, we talked about it at the beginning and you thought we were getting ahead of ourselves. Mindset.
I think mindset. overshadows all of it. So
it really does. Yeah. Right. And this is the difference between growth and fixed mindset. Talked about it in previous episodes. We didn't come up with it. It's American psychologist Carol Dweck. She came up with four different characteristics and kind of our knee-jerk reaction to those characteristics. Right. So we've got effort, right? You know, growth mindset understands that in order to make a change, make progress, improve, effort's part of the recipe. I'm inviting it. I'm looking forward to it. I know it's necessary. Whereas a fixed mindset says, hey, well, if I have to put too much effort, that means I'm not good enough to begin with. And therefore, this is probably a waste of my time. Again, I know it sounds, for me at least, when I hear that, I go, no one's like that. There's a lot of people like that. People just think you're either born with it or you're not. You're either talented or you're not. You're either a cat or you're a dog. All right. So the next one is what challenges, right? Same exact thing. So it's, you know, you're going to face challenges. You know, growth mindset knows that that's going to happen. They invite them. They encourage them, right? They're not going to be deterred by them, right? I understand that I'm trying to get better at something that I'm not already good at. How could I do that without being challenged at times? Okay. You want to talk about the next two?
I mean, mistakes. So, I mean, those with the fixed mindset, are discouraged by mistakes. They think that that, again, is a view of them not making any progress, whereas those with the growth mindset see those as an opportunity to learn and make any additional changes to aid in their improvement. So, and then we've talked about the last one pretty extensively, and we'll continue to do so because it's a foundation of our program is making sure you've got feedback. So oftentimes those with a fixed mindset, somebody starts to offer them feedback and they kind of like hole up and they get defensive and things like that. And they view it as funny. Negative.
I never thought that was going to be the case. Like, and even some of my students, I'm like, dude, you're paying me to coach you right now. Why are you taking this personal? I'm just giving you feedback. It's not to say that there weren't good, some good about what you just did, but I want to correct you. And that's why we're here. Right. And it sounds so silly. It's like, of course, everyone's got to take a lesson, should have a growth mindset, but it's like, they don't. But that's where
some of them come in and just want to hear, hey, great job.
It is weird. I'm like, if you want to pay me to be your cheerleader, I get that there's a, you know, group of coaches out there that are, you know, slapping high fives as soon as you hit a good shot because you got lucky and timed it and they're taking credit for the information they gave you. That's cool. Whatever. That's not us. We're going to give you feedback because we need to make sure that the rep that you're exposing to your brain is the highest quality as possible to where when you do that at really high repetition that we're ingrating the appropriate pattern. Make sense? Yeah. So we really wanted a simple mindset. You come into it and you genuinely believe you can get better or not. Right. We need you to genuinely believe based on everything we laid out and the science that plays a role in all of this. All right. Last but not least.
Last one. We had a full episode on, I believe already, right? Didn't we already talk about deliberate practice?
We sure did.
What's your practice like? What's it look like?
Yeah. This one, again, I think is pretty straightforward. Is your practice deliberate? I love it when we get done with an assessment. I actually hate it. You give them the information and they run straight out the door. We haven't actually had our first lesson yet, and they run straight to the driving range. Well, I can promise you one thing, that's not deliberate practice, and that is not the strategy or recipe to get you better. We say it all the time. Early on in the process, most cases, the last place we want you is at the driving range. So we talked about the five characteristics that deliberate practice is comprised of. I don't think we're going to go through all of them in detail today. No. But it is a mixture. I can do the one words. We want to make sure it's specific and isolated. It's high repetition. Continuous feedback. And that if you're doing it all correctly, it's probably not very fun. And it's mentally exhausting. But the biggest difference is, are you sitting here taking the direction and it's very, very focused practice versus going the range and hitting balls? So there it is. It's 11 characteristics that determine the rate of development. We know there can be more, right? We could have talked about environment. We could have talked about emotional control. We could have talked about, you know, expertise of your coach and so on.
Well, if you're going in somewhere else besides Smirkov at this point, then that's on you. So,
well said.
But one thing I want to highlight about this list, so again, we talk about, you know, we don't want them to be deterrents. We want them just be things that you understand that's going to, you know, it's going to have an effect on how quickly, you know, you can develop something.
Has an impact on your patients.
Right, yeah. But the highlight I want to make is there's several on that list that are in your control. I mean, you go down there, we look at lifestyle. That's in your control. Can you help, you know, fix your work environment? Can you sit a little bit better when you're on your commute? Are there things that you can kind of change in your daily habits and routines to help, you know, complement what we're trying to do here? We look at time available. Yes or no, you might be able to, you know, work some things in there, but look at the things that are, you know, of high priority to you, and see if you can squeak out a little bit more time available for yourself. But ultimately, mindset, I mean, that's in your control. Like, you know, if you can do a little self-help, you can get yourself a little bit of a development there and get past the fact that, you know, you've struggled with this for so long, but you're finally in a place that can actually help you break through and finally make those gains that you've been striving to, then, you know, hey, let's do that. Let's help you get there. Work ethic. We ask actually 5 different questions when we talk about like work ethic. Do you have complete trust in our team and our process? Do you have a sense of responsibility for your effort and performance? Do you emphasize quality when you practice and when you train? Do you have the discipline and are you detail oriented? And do you understand that success will come from teamwork? So we put a lot of onus on the individual coming in here, and that kind of determines and helps give them a better framework of what, you know, comprises their work ethic and how much control they have over it. And then, yeah, again, you know, just not going to the range and pounding balls, like, you know, just take some of the things that we're giving you, take it to heart and go put it in practice. And we guarantee that, you know, you're going to get some results there. So the great thing is that, I mean, that's how many of those? That's 1, 2, 3, 4. That's at least 5, almost 50% of the list that you have complete control over. So we talk about controlling variables in golf, and we'll talk about, you know, pre-round and in-round and all these different things that you can kind of.
You forgot about control. Genetics. You can control those too.
Well, sure. But once you're here, you can control the genetics of your next generation. But yeah, I mean, you've got almost 50% of that list that you can have specific control over if you want to put in the effort and you want to do so on your own. So
I love that. I love that. And honestly, the way we've laid it out in our student handbook is every question, like how old are you? We've graded it. So if you're, you know, call it 18 to 24, we label that as maybe easiest. So where on the other side we did, I don't know, you have it right in front of you, but it's like, you know, if you're 60 and older, well, probably hardest, not keyword there, not impossible, just level of difficulty.
I think we just picked those out kind of arbitrarily.
They were arbitrarily.
But they're just kind of,
create some introspection.
But you look at, you know, when people kind of meet their peak, I mean, you're looking at, you know, the guys that are first-round draft picks in the NFL and soon-to-be first-round draft picks in the NBA and stuff like that. I mean, they're definitely in that 18 to 24 yep. range when they're coming in. Some of those guys will, you know, come into the league and be very instrumental on their teams right away, and some will take a couple years of development. But they talk about when, you know, players start to retire, specifically NBA, NFL, I mean, you're getting in the upper 20s, early 30s. Not many people make it up into the upper 30s and 40s. You know, hockey is one of the unique sports where guys tend to play a little bit longer, which also is surprising to me, just because it is a heavily contact sport. But, you know, but yeah, so we come up with those somewhere arbitrarily.
We put some serious thought into it. And,
we did, if you don't believe it.
But yes, it is somewhat arbitrary. But it's just, again, it's introspection to help align your expectations with reality. All right, we're gonna conclude the episode with a tip. And my tip is actually, it comes from the very first page in our student handbook, part of the reading. It's you know, a few paragraphs. But there's a line in there that we, you know, put in the handbook that states when, and you could take this advice for anyone, whether you're working with us or anyone else. We wrote, not verbatim, our best students have the mindset that we hired them as their student versus them hiring us as their coach.
Cool. I love that. This was an awesome episode.
I liked it. I really enjoyed talking about this. I thought it was going to be about a 20-minute episode, but it's weird why I thought that, because we should know ourselves by now.
Yeah.
But you know what? Under 50 minutes if we cheers quickly.
All right, keep this.
Cheers.
A big thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Everything But the Tip podcast. Stay connected with us on all social media platforms by following at Smart Golf Fitness. For additional episodes, updates, and exclusive content, check out our website at smartgolffitness.com. Don't forget to show some love, like, share, and subscribe to ensure you never miss out on the latest insights and engaging discussions. Your support means the world to us. Until next time, keep swinging and stay fit.